Across the Ribble Valley, we are Ribble FM.
I'm joined on the backseat driver with a rally driver who shot to fame in 1996. Well, the main reasons being, and I don't think he would disapprove of this, a lot of the top drivers managed to crash, where he and his four-wheel drive Citroen Sierra Cosworth did marvellous things. And like a lot of people, I used to sit down at 10:30 at night, 10:45, and watch the highlight. And 1996 was special because today's guest, Nigel Werswick, was suddenly all over the telly. Nigel, welcome to the Backseat Driver.
Thank you very much, yeah.
How did it all start? Because, I mean, the Werswicks are racing families, aren't they? I mean, you rally, you used to race a lot. Your brother Tony was famous for racing the bright yellow Ferrari 308 rally car, of which was probably the only one knocking about at the time. It's just in the blood. How did it all start?
Well, we had no motorsport background at all. My dad liked a nice car, but he was not into motorsport at all.
Yeah.
But he made the mistake of buying us a Scale Electric when we were a kid, and I think that's what started it off. And obviously, my brother's 4 years older than me, so he would get to drive a car before me.
Yeah.
So I navigated for him, and we sort of went into rallying and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it just sort of carried on from there, really, and escalated.
What was the family reaction to this?
I don't think there's any real problem, to be honest, because we worked on the cars, and we didn't have a lot of money, to be honest, so yeah, we had to do it all ourselves. So my dad was just quite happy to let us use the workshop, fix the cars, go
out. Kept me out of mischief.
I don't think he saw quite saw the point of it, because obviously when a generation grew up and a car in a family is quite a rare thing.
Yeah.
See somebody make a nice car and go out and roll it, so it went against the grain of it. But because it didn't affect anything, either him or anything else, we just fixed it. He just goes, well, you know what they're doing, let them carry on and do
it. Well, the other strange thing is, you take a nice car, you turn it into a rally car, you roll it, you spend all the following week repairing it, making it nice, then you go out the next weekend and make a mess of it again.
Yeah, well, the plan is not to roll it, of course. That's where the skill comes in. And I've certainly got better at avoiding that sort of thing. But if you're going fast enough to do well, you're going fast enough to have a crash. You can't point to me any single driver who hasn't had a crash or an idiot who's done any good.
Yeah.
You know, it just goes with the territory.
Well, not being funny, I mean, the two names I quote frequently, Harry Vatanen and Colin McRae, they were either sensational or partied up a tree.
Yeah, well, I mean, at that level, they're all amazing, but, I mean, that probably cost them all world championships, because you get somebody like Tommy Mäkinen,
yeah,
who didn't and won four world championships, so he might have just been a bit more steady. McRae, yes. Everyone thinks that McRae had been fantastic, and he was, you know, and Vatanen was, but they didn't win as many world championships as they possibly could.
Yeah.
But we love them because of the way they drive. We just, yeah, you know, that driving is just fantastic to watch. You know.
What was your first rally car?
Mine was a Mark 1 Escort, and what it was a car that was owned by the company, and when it came to the end of its life, it was getting a bit rusty and stuff like that, and my father kindly said, a year or two before, to be honest, for every pound you save up, I'll match it when you come to buy a car.
Yeah.
So I'm in this saving, we'll get this bit of money together and everything, and lo and behold, that my money doubled, if you will,
yeah,
happened to be just the right amount to buy this Mark 1 Escort. But it had like a rusty left front wing, and
yeah,
and in my bedroom I had a pair of Bilsteins and a pair of Super Oscars ready to go, and a pair of turrets when I got, yeah, it. I'd been taught how to weld here, so yeah, when I got it,
point out now, Nigel and his brother and his family own an engineering firm. That's where this knowledge comes from.
Yeah. Well, I sort of did a full apprenticeship within the company, but it wasn't a soft apprenticeship. I think my first job was to drill 1,600 holes. the fact that I remember that means it wasn't a particularly, you know, and just got paid the same wage everyone else. So I've learned every single skill in the factory, but it comes in useful when you're trying to fix a rally car.
Yeah.
So I can weld the machine, fabricate stuff, drill stuff, you know all the skills of fixing cars, otherwise I couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah. Motorsport isn't a cheap hobby, no matter what anybody ever says, and there's all these schemes. Oh, it's cheap, you can do it. You can do navigation rallies in your everyday car, but that's at the very, very basic of it all. But so, I mean, you must have started to do reasonably well, because, I mean, it's progressed and progressed and progressed. I mean, were you motoring news era?
I never really drove on night rallies. I was saying earlier on, I actually navigated my brother, and we did a navigational rally, quite a big one, which you don't have nowadays, a novice night rally, just for novices. And we started car 17, I was navigating. And we got back to Preston, and we were the first one there. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've made the biggest mistake ever. What have I done wrong? I missed a page. It turned out we hadn't. We had basically other people who had either overtaken them, or they'd overshot, or they got lost. And we got back, and we're actually first overall. So I won a rally navigating before I was 17, driving. But navigating for my brother, to see somebody drive, to sit in a rally car and see somebody better than you drive, helps you. You then go out and drive your car and you realise what it can do.
Yeah.
So when I was 17, 18, whatever it was, I nicked all his seeding, borrowed his then girlfriend as a co-driver, not in a bad way, and we entered a rally, stage rally called the Pie Stages, and we managed to beat a seeding. We did okay. It was only 1100cc engine, so it wasn't a lot of power to it. So that's how I started rallying. I started stage rallying. I've done very, very little driving on night rallies, very little. Cause
now, we'll return to what we spoke about at the introduction, 1996, with the Sierra Cosworth, Sierra Sapphire Cosworth four-wheel drive, and all of a sudden you're all over the telly. I mean, how did that all come about? I mean, you'd entered the Lombard RAC and everybody hoped you did well, but none of us, not being funny, truly expected to see you up there with the best. Well, no disrespect to your driving, your car.
To be honest, it was a weak year. It's what's called a two-wheel drive year, because it wasn't full work. And I'd done the RAC a few times. In 93, it was really, really snowy, and I'd done the whole lot. We finished fairly well.
Yeah.
What it was, 20th or something. Anyway, in 1996, me and Clive Molyneux set up off the motorway. We turned up into Kershaw. And straight away, they came off a dry road into the forest. There was snow.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to do this again. You know, I really need to. Anyway, we caught them past somebody who ended up finishing sixth on the rally. We ended up finishing 11th by 1 second.
Yeah.
We were 10th overnight. But the biggest reason is, in the middle of the forest, in the middle of the night, we came across a marshal waving like crazy in the middle of the road. There must have been a massive accident around this bend or something. So I'm fighting on the sheet ice, and eventually I had to throw it down the ditch to slow it down enough.
Yeah.
Punctured both right on tyres. And there was nothing there.
Yeah.
So we had to stop in the stage and change two tyres. And so instead of being six overall, we're 11 by 1 second. But just going back to how you're saying it's all over the TV, there's a story there. My mother and father, they didn't really come and watch a lot. They came occasionally to Greystoke, and they'd see me on Gisborne when I'd done that. Anyway, they were at home, and our agent was over from America, and they're all sat in the front room watching the TV, watching this RAC rally come. And as you say, I think Gwyndaff Evans hit this thing in Chatsworth House and rolled his car and flattened the roof. Who was the other one in that? Renault Megane.
There was a Megane.
Rolled it. And so we were running quite high up at that point.
I think Mikula made a mess.
No, he wasn't doing
that. There were a couple of big names. Made a right mess.
But anyway, basically, these two cars rolled, and a few minutes later, they're all sat there, and the TV sort of saying, and next on the stage, we have Nigel Worswick. And then my mother, you can watch about like a mother's like, you know, they're absolutely sure we're going to roll this down the road or something. Anyway, we managed to avoid it in this tree stump that they drove it and got through. It was a very, very tricky stage. The whole rally was tricky, to be honest. Really, really icy. But we set some genuinely good times.
Yeah.
And particularly through Mid Wales on the last day, some sixth overall times and stuff like that. And second overall at race circuit, something like that. So, but as I say, it wasn't a full WRC year. But the frustrating thing is we've been 10th overall the night before, and we just went too careful on the last day.
I was going to say, how do you strike a balance between maintaining competitive speeds and stage time, but making sure that you don't write the car off? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're people like Gwyndaff Evans, who, if he wrecks a works Renault, so what? If Nigel Worswick wrecks his car, it's your car. You have to drag it back to your workshops and start again, type of thing. How do you strike this balance? What do you do? Do you back off or what?
It's very, very difficult. I was interviewed on the radio just before the RAC that year, and they said, oh, well, Nigel, you've been winning a lot, because I think we won something like the Cambrian and whatever, Silver's Day.
Yeah.
And said, so are you going to win the RAC rally? And I sort of had to politely explain, well, no. They said, well, why not? I said, well, the trouble is, I'm spending all week at a desk earning the money and working to afford to do it.
Yeah.
I said, I don't get any practice, I'm using second-hand tyres, slower. I said, and the guys I'm up against, the factory drivers, they'll be out testing the whole week before on the back of doing a full world championship. I said, so when we set off down the first straight into the first 90 right bend, there's only three places to brake. Too early, bang on the right spot, or too late.
Yeah.
If I brake too late once on the whole rally, hundreds of miles of it, I'm off.
Yeah.
That's it, you're out of the rally. If I brake bang on every time, that'd be pretty good. I'd be some driver. So I obviously, like all the amateurs or whatever, even the good, I brake that little bit earlier. We're not quite that committed because we're just not that in practice. You know, we just can't afford to be so expensive. easy to put the mileage in. So what you've got to do really is play on, go fast, yeah, but try for a rally like that, try and make sure you finish. You don't make any big stupid mistakes, don't get stuck in a ditch, don't do something like that.
Well, is that the old saying, to finish first, first you've got to finish?
Yeah, but if you start with that mentality, you never win anything, so that's too a bit of craziness involved as well. And I think Clive that year said these rallies, I know they're long, but let's just set off like a sprint event. Let's just treat every... Because, you know, we've got a fairly good history of staying on the road. So let's just take every stage like a separate stage. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Yep, all right, we'll do that then. Within the limits of what I've just said.
Yeah. So, I mean, over the years, you've rallied rear-wheel drive and then four-wheel drive. Was the transition for you gradual? And what made you suddenly want to go from a rear-wheel drive car, which are delightfully spectacular from a spectator's point, into a four-wheel drive? When did the transition come and what made you do it? And what was the car?
It was an exact point in time, and I remember it absolutely perfectly. We're doing the 88 Lombard RAC rally in a whale tail Sierra Cosmo, not a Sapphire, so a two-wheel drive car. Yeah. And I was queued up behind some foreigners, one in a Mitsubishi Galant and one in a Lancia Integrale.
Yeah.
And we're setting off into Grisdale, and they just revved it up, shot up the road, both of them. And I revved up, so I'm just spinning the wheels for no distance. And I thought, people are coming to our rally. This is our specialist hour. We're supposed to know what we're doing in better equipment than we've got. So I decided then there's some way or other I had to get my hands on a four-wheel drive car.
I was just putting in, I mean, like the first four-wheel drive car that everybody recognised on rally was the Quattro. Was just set the world alight because of how it did it. And I must say, the sound. You'd also had the pleasure of the Black Volcano herself, Michelle Mouton, driving. But, I mean, it's moved on a lot from there, because I conclude by that time, the Quattro was all technology.
Well, the modern cars nowadays have improved in so much, because the Quattro had locked four-wheel drive and the engine overhanging the front.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of turbo lag. So people like Blomqvist were brilliant because they came from a front-wheel drive background.
Yeah.
So those old-school four-wheel drive cars really suited front-wheel drive drivers, including my Sapphire Cosworth 4x4.
Yeah.
And it takes you quite a long time to learn it, you know, what you should be doing, start a completely different technique. If you've come, like me, from a rear-wheel drive background.
Yeah.
Modern cars are much better. They're much better balanced. They don't have the same turbo, like the engine's better balanced, and they have much longer stroke suspension, so they ride anything. So they're like night and day compared with the Quattro in terms of what they'll do and how good they are.
106.7 Ribble FM.
Suicide.
The voice of the valley. 106.7 Ribble FM.
Are you tired of paying a high pump price for your company diesel? Or are you using a fuel card now but worried you signed up to an introductory rate that's now a thing of the past? Let me introduce the Green Arc Fuel Card. With a fully transparent, consistently low price and no surprise surcharges, the Green Arc Fuel Card has nothing to hide. Why not speak to our team on 0345 646 5451 or visit greenarcfuelcard.co.uk and see how much you can save.
Are you tired of sky-high housing costs? Are you ready for a change of scenery? At Three Rivers, our rural caravan park is the perfect solution for those seeking an affordable, peaceful and beautiful place to call home. Nestled in the heart of the countryside, our park offers exceptional facilities, including a cafe, swimming pool and function suite. You can even choose your own plot and specify the style of home that best suits your needs. Don't miss this opportunity to join our thriving community and enjoy the best of both worlds, the convenience of modern living with the charm and serenity of rural life. Contact us today to learn more and schedule a tour. Three Rivers, the perfect home is waiting for you.
You need a rewired job, a new kitchen fit, bathroom installing, tiles and plastering, plumbing, central heating, a building refurb job, call One Stop Refurbs, they'll do the lot. One Stop Refurbs, One Stop Refurbs, One Stop Refurbs. Call Burnley now on 426-988, 426-988.
Finance packages available too. Make your first stop, One Stop.
Has your home been spray foamed and now you're stuck? Missold insulation that's causing damp in your loft, blocking your mortgage or making your house unsellable? You were told it was for the best, but now it's a costly mistake. Eco Giants are here to fix it. We safely remove spray foam and restore your home's value. Call Eco Giants today on 01200 411 830 or head to our website ecogiants.co.uk and fill in a form. Your home deserves better.
Transform your ride with the Wheel Specialist. With branches on the Barrowbrook Industrial Estate and White Hills Business Park in Blackpool, we specialise in everything wheels. From diamond cutting and powder coating, plus exclusive bespoke finishes in any colour you can dream of, and even tyres. We guarantee your wheels will leave our shop looking brand new. Give your wheels the care they deserve. And use code RIBBLE for exclusive discount on your next refurb. Visit our friendly staff now and get a free quote tailored just for you. The Wheel Specialist. Your wheels, our passion.
Ribble FM. Listen to Ribble FM anytime, anywhere. Download our dedicated smartphone app. Go to ribblefm.com.
Because I once read one article, and I must confess, I don't know whether it's cankering or not, but he'd worked out the turbo lag. So he, to make sure he kept up speed, was back on the throttle at a point in time when most people wouldn't, because he was anticipating, by the time I get to there, the lag will have gone, the turbos will be firing, and off we go.
Absolutely, and that's what I did. Going back to the Whaletail Sierra Cosworth, which didn't have a restrictor, so yeah, it was relatively a big turbo, but a lot of lag. I went up doing the Galloway Hills to learn how to drive this car, and basically what you do is you come flying down a road, and if you have to brake, you throw it in, and you hit the throttle before you go into the bend.
Oh.
And it then picks
which isn't technically an insane time to do it.
It takes a while to get used to doing that. And then, so what happens is it builds up the boost during the bend.
Yeah.
If you've got too much, you can then ease it back a bit. But if you haven't done that, you're losing that on every single bend. And the other technique I found is just try to stay on the throttle, stay in a high gear, just keep steering things till you absolutely have to slow down.
Yeah,
straight round it. Now, to give you an idea, Alan Prost, bloke who'd never spun a car ever, when he came out of the turbo issue, out of it, and he went into naturally aspirated, he kept spinning the car.
Yeah.
Because he was doing that exact same technique that better drivers than me and me did, which is flooring the throttle on the entrance of the bend.
Yeah.
Waiting for the boost to build up and all the rest of it. Of course, it wasn't doing a naturally aspirated. He's right. So somebody's got to that, who really never spun a car ever before.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the other thing we were taught before we went on air was technique. And even in two-wheel drive cars, you said watch the big boys and watch where the front wheels are and watch how they set a car compared to people who think they're good. And I mean, what is that technique? I mean, I'll let a rally driver explain.
It's mostly on gravel, and the idea is you should be very sideways into a tight bend and come out dead straight with all the wheels facing forward. Not only for traction, but the idea is, well, it's a safety thing as well, bizarrely. As you come up to, say, a 90-degree bend, you can see whether there's big rocks on either side of the road.
Yeah.
And if there isn't, you throw the thing square onto the road and you get it all... By the time you get to the apex, you should be pointing the right direction. You should go back on the throttle. And if you're doing that, you're not going to clutter big rocks on the ditches on either side. Mm. If you go in straight, which a lot of the perhaps later numbers, and you'll see the difference if you ever go out watching a rally, the top boys are sideways in straight out, the later guys who are just starting maybe go in a bit scared, you know, understeering, then hit the throttle and they're coming out with the back wheels in the ditch. But then you can just hit whatever God provides, could be a log, could be a rock, whatever, you know, because you can be committed to that, so you can't do it. And so if you watch the ultimate drivers, be it in Mikkola back in the Escorts or four-wheel drive cars, you'll see mid-bend, they've virtually got no opposite lock on a perfect bend.
Yeah.
The car's already facing the way it wants to go, even though it's only halfway around the bend. And they're hard on the throttle. They're really good guys.
I mean, one of the cars I was once a passenger was a 6R4, and I've never been in a car that changed direction or twitched about like it. I mean, would you drive all of them like that, or are there cars that are different to that? Some cars are unique to drive. I mean, like a 6R4 is. I was actually glad to get out of it.
The only time I've ever been in a 6R4 was Cyril Bolton, a friend of mine who sadly passed away recently, and he took me out in his 6R4, and it was on intermediate tyres, I think. We're on the public road, it was a back road, and he wasn't an idiot, so he was a sensible driver. But I should know what I was doing. I'd just done the Manx in a Whale-tail Sierra on Cosmos on slicks.
Yeah.
But you'd think I have a bit of an idea about what's possible and etc. Took me down this road, it was a favourite road, and we're coming up to this 90-degree right-hand bend, and I looked, and I don't know if it applied the brakes or not, and thought, not only are we not going to make this bend, we're going to knock that gate right off its hinge, and we're going to be halfway into that field.
Yeah.
And he just stood on the brakes, he just stopped. Well, not stopped completely, lost all the speed, and he went around the bend, no drama.
Yeah.
And he said when he first got it, I think he went to one of his races, on the Aintree, and he overtook somebody into a chicane and braked. I think he was on a new course car. And it was that effect, ran in the back of it. So a four-wheel drive is an amazing thing. Cars do differ. The Sapphire Cosmos is a long thing, and it was quite stable, but it was quite chuck.
I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, back then, it didn't strike anybody as strange, but when you started to watch, well, especially you on television, you suddenly realised what a big car they were. And you occupied a lot of space, and they were long and everything else. How did this affect things? Did you just drive them accordingly? Because I conclude they had a slight pendulum effect, all that car stuck out behind.
It swings and roundabouts. If you get a very short car, it can be very twitchy, and that can be good on narrow, twisty stuff, but on flat-out stuff, it might not be that stable.
Yeah.
And something like the Sapphire was very long, but it was very stable and very fast sections of forest.
Yeah.
But maybe not so nippy in and out of the twisty bits. And there's a lot of technology goes into it, even at that level, how the differentials are set up. And I set them all up right, and then I found out that on sheet ice, if you pull the handbrake, you're pulling locking the back wheels, but the transmission was that tight, it locked the front wheels as well. So you came to a hairpin, pull the handbrake, which is the right thing to do, you know, and it just locked all four wheels. On sheet ice, that'd be fine on gravel because there's enough grip there to overcome it. But so you quickly have to adapt and go, well, that doesn't work. What am I going to do next? You know? So, you know, it's always a learning curve.
Yeah. And I mean, like with you and the Ford, you've always had a love of the Cosworth, so.
I love Fords generally.
Yeah.
But, I started off in Mark II Escorts. I love Mark II Escorts. I only had one deviation for a year away from that with an Opel Manta GT. Nice-ish car, but it had a problem with the engine management, so it kept stopping, I sort of fell out with it a bit. But it's still a good car. And I've stayed with Fords ever since. I actually rallied a Capri 3-litre. I don't remember that. And
I must confess, I don't remember that. I remember your Sierras, and one of the cars you're famous for, of course, another one, is the Escort Cosmos.
Well, just nipping back to the Capri, I know we skipped over. It's actually a race car. It was an ex-Vince Woodman car that Mike Newman owned, and I bought it.
Oh, yeah.
And we changed it to the gravel, and the first rally or two, we had no success with it. Partly because the first rally was a rush, and it was on Silverstone gearing, as if it was on slicks. So we put forest tyres on it, so it would do 170 mile an hour, in theory. So I did the whole of the Kynog in first and second gear, because it was that long. You just hadn't time to sort it. And then it blew the engine up on the Manx, and I thought, I've done the wrong thing here.
Yeah.
Anyway, we sorted it out, and we won Group A on the Peter Russell, Group A on the Mueller, and we finished third in Group A on the Audi Sport, which doesn't sound too great, except when you work out the Pentia Ricola won it.
Yeah.
And Mike Stewart was second in a Works Rover. We were 11th overall in Capri on a very, very big rally. So it was a great car. Funny enough, actually slightly better in the Forest, and it was on tarmac. Anyway, Mike likes the car so much, he contacted me a few months ago. He was trying to track it down because he wants it back to put it back in a race car for his stable. So I'm hoping he's managed to find it.
Yeah.
I gave him all the info I could.
I mean, ironically enough, one of my previous guests, Malcolm Graham, rally driver, he rallied a Capri for a while, a three-litre. He thoroughly enjoyed driving it.
Yeah.
And in the London to Mexico for Capris and London to Munich. I know that doesn't sound a long way, folks, but you'll find out why they went via the Sahara. So, I mean, there are certain unlikely cars that have rallied.
Well, my brother actually put me onto the Capri, and he rang me up one day. We were casting around what to do, and it was Group A that was very restricted. He said, how about a Group A car that's got 250 horsepower, a close ratio gearbox, an Atlas? So what the heck is it, a Mustang? Something like that. He said, no, it's a Capri, and it was homologated with so many options for racing. It was brilliant. So I rang my then sponsors up and sort of gave them the same spiel, and he couldn't guess what it was either. He said, well, look, I trust you. If you think it's going to be okay, then let's go with it. So we did, and it was. It was very successful. Very unusual car. Everyone thought it looked big, but it never felt big.
Yeah.
Just had, well, you know, it had some...
I think from a sponsor's point of view, something like that is to their benefit because people will want to see it.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it was a great car. I mean, we'd had the Opel Mansa, which was a nice-looking car, brilliant. And then they carried on with this Whale-tail Sierra Cosworth.
Yeah.
And then, for various reasons, they couldn't really sponsor me. I forget why. It just came to an end, like budgets or something like that. Anyway, I was coming to do the RAC one year, and he rang me up, the guy from Nicolet, Pat O'Brien. He said, I'm really sorry about this.
What?
He said, well, I found this little pot of money that I didn't realise was there. They left over. Do you want it for the RAC? Right? I said,
well, good.
Thank you. They were great sponsors, really nice people there. So, yeah, and so we did the RAC rally with the Whale Tail with Nicolet on it again.
I mean, it's one of them ironic things over the years. I've had sponsors, and if you part company on good terms, it's surprising. They'll maybe come back for something. You can ring them up a few years later and say, what do you fancy being involved with this? And a lot of the time, if you got on well and parted company under friendly terms, they'll come back maybe just for one event like you did.
Absolutely, and I'm going to do a name drop here, but it is a genuine one. We're doing a talk down at, I think, at the aerospace.
Yeah.
And there's Stuart Turner there. I don't know how the heck I ended up on the top table with him, but we're on about sponsorship.
Yeah.
And we're on about getting sponsorship getting sponsorship and stuff like that. And I made a point saying, when you get a sponsorship deal and the money, that's when the work starts. It's not clear off with the money. I said, you work to make it value for money, so you feel the value. And he was nodding here and said, yeah, I forgot to say that. I should have said that. He didn't say exactly that. So, I mean, even recently, took the Mark II over to a rally, and a lovely lady came. Never had it before. She turned up on a car park and said, do you mind if we sponsor you? I'm like, yeah, okay. So they gave us some money. It wasn't a huge, but we put the stickers on and everything like that. And we gave them value for money. And I ran out of time, but when I got back, I got a picture of the car, went down to the place, got it printed off, put in a frame.
Yeah.
This was abroad, so I actually couriered it to them. So about 2 or 3 weeks later, they got an email. I said, oh, thanks very much for that. And they'll treasure it, because they'll put it somewhere. That's up to there. They can put it in the business, because it was a business that sponsored us, or put it at home. And even after the rally, they said, well, that's our first toe in the water with sponsorship, but I'm really glad we did it. And then a friend came on and said, can we join in and sponsor you next year as well? So, you know, that's teed up. It's just by treating people right.
Yeah.
So we did a good job for them on the rally, and then that little thing afterwards, unexpected, they didn't know it was going to happen. But
I think that's one of the problems these days. I mean, I get people approaching me by email. I want sponsoring. Well, what have you done? Oh, well, I haven't done anything yet. I just want sponsoring. It doesn't work like that, Morris and Girls. You have to have, shall we say, demonstrated a degree of success and ability, and people will take notes. That's probably why you got approached, because you are a known rally driver, and I've been for many years, with quite a decent amount of success. You're not exactly a novice.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not actually always about being successful, really. It's about giving them some exposure back.
Yeah.
Now, you've probably heard of a guy called Tony Jardine, who used to be Formula One.
I know him.
He doesn't do spectacularly well. He does the RAC, Roger Albert Clark Rally, each year. But he works really hard to get sponsors and give them the bang for the buck. So if it's like this new fuel or something like that, he'd be using that and advertising. Yeah. And and you know about it. He gets in all the dailies and the papers and stuff like that. So the sponsor in that case aren't expecting to win the rally, but they are expecting to get lots of exposure for what they did. And I know one of my sponsors when I was in the Sapphire, I don't know how to say that, but basically they weren't, I didn't think they were getting enough. They had somebody who should have been getting value out of what we were doing. So I decided to take it into my own hands. So I wrote to the electrical magazines and sent them a picture and a story and got them something that they could just print straight away. And so it was an electronics company and they did drives, electronic drives and stuff. So picture me on the ice and snow and the headline was something like, you know, Alan Bradley is what's the sponsor there. Gives perfect control under all conditions. Custom and Nigel words, he drove his Alan Bradley sport, you know, da da da. So they could use it just as it was.
Yeah.
It gave them a really good bang for the buck. It was sort of a tenuous link, but it was good enough. I think their publicity people should have been doing more like that and end up I did it for them.
From round here, for round here, 106.7 Ribble FM.
I have this paralyzing fear that I'll maybe go nowhere. But God forbid me ever admitting I could be scared. And I can't stand my friends right now, we got nothing in common. But being lonely's worse than just having friends who don't care. You said it looks like I've been going through hell. How did you know? How could you tell? Ask me to explain myself. Well, I'm trying my best, yeah, to be brutal. Don't wanna say it, but I really think that I miss him. It might seem stupid, but I still look through all of our texts. Who knew that wanting someone could ever make me this desperate? Don't think I'll do that again. No, you said it looks like I've been going through hell. How did you know? How could you tell? You asked me to explain myself. Well, I'm trying my best, yeah, to be brutally honest. Nobody said change, it would be this exhausting. A foot on the brake, cause it's been making me car sick. How could you blame me? Growing up is chaotic.
Could you blame me? 106.7 Ribble FM.
Ever feel like creating a website is like trying to juggle while riding a unicycle? Well, juggle no more. Introducing 50 to 1 Media. We make the designing of your website as easy as pie. We offer complete web development and implementation. And we'll make sure Google loves your website as much as you do. From domain purchasing to hosting, turning your site into a Ribble Valley rockstar, we've got you covered. So why not drop in for a brew and let's chat about how 50 to 1 Media can turn your web woes into web wows. Visit 50to1media.co.uk, because who needs a unicycle when you have us? That's 50, the number 2 and the number 1.co.uk.
At Bowcutt BMW, our competitive service prices offer up to 40% discount on BMWs over 3 years old. Our expert technicians know your BMW inside out, and we only use genuine parts which come with a 2-year warranty. Top quality servicing at a seriously competitive price. Book your next service online with us today. Search Bowcutt BMW in Blackburn or Preston. Think BMW, think Bowcutt.
Hey, have you lost weight?
No, I've just had my bra fitted properly, so everything is right where it should be. Remember, any good outfit starts with the right foundations. If your boobs aren't up where they should be, being supported and making you feel comfortable, then nothing is going to look or feel right. You wouldn't put a size 7 foot in a size 3 shoe now, would you? Perfect Fit by Carol, with more sizes than you can imagine, and fitting so easy. There's no tape measures involved. It's practically magic. You'll wonder why you didn't visit sooner. Visit them on King Street, Clitheroe, or check out their Facebook page. Perfect Fit by Carol, getting you your perfect fit.
Looking to turn your precious memories, holiday snaps, sports shirts, family heirlooms into gallery quality showpieces? Then head over to Bespoke Picture Framing by Alexander, located on York Street, Clitheroe. With over 150 five-star reviews, Alexander handcrafts every frame with museum quality glass options to preserve your treasures for years to come. He frames everything from prints and paintings to vinyl records and odd keepsakes. Oh, and he loves a challenge. So whatever you need framing, Alexander's your expert. Bespoke Picture Framing by Alexander. Bring in your memories. Walk out with art.
Craving something different? Discover Akila Street Food in Great Harwood, where homemade Indian-inspired street food dishes meet with a Lancashire twist. Sizzling curries, proppadoms, fish pakoras, rolls, wraps, you name it. Every bite is crafted with love and passion for tasty treats. Lunch, dinner and even takeaway. It's the perfect place to tickle your taste buds. Akila Street Food, Great Harwood. Taste the fusion, taste the passion. Your taste buds will thank you. For more information, find us on Facebook.
Mother for the cannons and the...
voice of the valley. This is Ribble FM.
The one problem is I'll probably get criticised for this now. A lot of the younger people do advertise, don't know what they're doing. In fact, that's my opinion. They don't think, as this that dreadful term, out of the box. They don't think, well, such a body you'd be interested in. Send it to.
Yeah.
They might say, no, thanks, but at least you've sent.
Well, I think one time we were not lucky enough, we won the, you remember the Silver Stage, usually around here, and we won it, but I don't think there was a motoring news as it was then reporter here, and I thought, if I don't watch it, this isn't going to turn up.
Yeah.
So I wrote the whole article, giving credit to everybody else, and a picture of me, and sent it to them. They got, just banged it in straight, it was, because it was written in motoring news speak.
Yeah.
And they just read it, and I thought, well, so there's a lesson. If you're not going to report it, do it yourself.
Now, I mean, you've quite a selection of rally cars now, because we've just had the pleasure of looking at one or two. But shall we say, you're not a man for all seasons. You're a man with cars for all seasons.
Well, it sort of happened by accident, really.
Because the one thing I know about yourself and your brother, you tend not to part with cars.
It's not quite. What happened was the Escort World Rally car, which I've still got, me and Clyde Molyneux built in 2000. So I've had it for 23 years, so it's sort of been paid off a bit, really. We've had a lot of success with it. It's a fabulous car, and it's probably better now than it ever was.
Yeah.
So for a while, that was my sort of only rally car, and I got a Mark II, a clubby one, just for messing around with, and that ended up being too weak. Everything about it was just the gearbox, you know, wasn't strong enough. So I sold it, and I bought the current one. It wasn't a lot of money, but ended up doing it up, and it's better and better and better. But just, yeah. So that would have been it. But it's a sort of a bit of a sad story in the same way as well. That my mother passed away about 2 years ago, 2 years ago, and my father has already passed away, so I had a little bit of money from that. I thought, well, before I'm too old, which probably already am, really, let's try and get one of these new, like, top-range cars and try that and see how I get on with it. So I always run. Now, if you look on the front bumper, if I can, it's got Alan and Edith written on the front bumper, which is my father and my mother, because I always think it's their car, not mine. And so I got that, and I've been running that and just trying to get the hang of it. I'm just taking a little bit of time, and I think we're getting there gradually now.
Yeah, because the other car you rally is a Fiesta.
That's the car.
That's the car.
Yeah, that's the car I'm talking
about. So, because you also do one or two, if you look at your social media, you like Barbados, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually don't do much rallying, so I tend to put the money aside to do that each year.
Yeah.
And I went years ago, literally as a once-in-a-lifetime thing, I thought, let's just go and do this for the fun.
Yeah.
And a few other people have done that, and he's fatal, because everybody who's done it for the first time just end up coming back. There's people who've done it for 20 years and stuff, so it's just such a great welcome you get there over there, and lovely people, great weather and stuff like that. And this last time I did it, we didn't take it too serious. Took the Mark II and just drove it sideways everywhere, and the crowds of Bayesians,
they love the art for the entertainment of all concerned.
I mean, we're still quick, but yeah, the Bayesians, they watch all the world cars go past and they're like, yeah, okay. If you come up and handbrake or sideways or donut it or something, they go mental. They instantly know what they want. And they know, they're like, and they make you real. And they just go crazy. So we enjoy it.
I mean, ironically enough, and I know the interviews with you, I took part in the Eiffel in Germany on four occasions. In the historics, with a friend of mine, it is very, very famous 9/11. And we were tagged on the back of the Mullins, the modern WRC cars and everything else. The organisers suddenly got used to the fact that the spectators had watched the WRC cars, but the crowds doubled as soon as the historics were out. They wanted to watch the old ones.
There's that, and also, on the last Barbados, you get seeded by a rally the week before.
Yeah.
We had some issues with the gear change, and basically we never set a proper time. So we're seeded back at 53, which is not a problem. Anyway, they put the onboard camera on for us, because they were expecting great things on the first day, but we had throttle issues, so we weren't too spectacular till the last three stages. So the next day, they put it on car 60, which was an orange Mark I Escort, a Bayesian guy called Jason Crozier, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I saw some of the footage of him, and I thought, well, fair enough, because I thought I was ripping the place up, but so was he. But we're running together nearly at the end of the rally. So a bit like you were saying, all the spectators like, world car, whatever, and then it sort of petered off. And then I arrive full sideways right up to the thing. And then he arrives in this orange, just the same. So I am honestly sure that the Bayesians, well, they stayed there all day anyway, because the way it's organised, you do loops, there's no point in moving. But I can't help the feeling they were looking forward to these lower numbers coming through, driving like idiots.
I mean, from the sounds of it, as time has gone by, and I'm not being funny, it's like we've said, we're both advancing in our years of what you just said. Although your rally cars, of which you've a few, are serious pieces of machine, I get the feeling now you do it more for fun and pleasure than to see your name on a leaderboard or on a results sheet.
You sort of have to, because there seems to be quite a large group now of particularly younger guys who seem to have very substantial backing quite often families. And they're out every weekend, brand new tyres, fuel stuff, the mileage you've got under the belt, and also the youth and bravery factor and stuff like that. And there's a lot of them, so it's very, very tough to go up against them. But, I mean, this car is a left-hand drive car, and so I went to the test session when I first got it with the people who actually originally developed it. And I was quite proud of myself that I'd driven around this left-hand drive, you know, not hit anything. I thought I'd gone fairly well. And he came up and he says, yeah, really, for a car like this, you should be left-foot braking it, which I've never done or had. I mean, mine was thinking, well, I'm too old to start left-foot braking stuff. But what came out of my mouth was, OK, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
So I've had some practice at left-foot braking, so I'm actually had to learn to a left-hand drive car and left-foot braking.
So not being funny, you currently drive as your old car, the most un-Nigel Wurzbach-like vehicle you could think. You have an oldish left-hand drive Skoda Fabia. But it's like you were saying earlier on, if something suddenly started to go wrong in a left-hand drive car, your mind will, or your brain will switch to right-hand drive, and you can cause yourself all sorts of problems.
Well, we're all the same. It's actually Aaron Newby's recce car. He's never driven anything other left-hand drive ever since he was 17.
Yeah.
So I bought it off him and Stuart, and then Neil Roskell borrowed it off me because he needed a left-hand drive car for recce years ago, and then John Stone was stuck mank, so I lent to him, and both of them kind of looked after me. So all of us drivers in the left-hand drive cars need time in a left-hand drive car, particularly just before the event. And what I could say is that I drove it back, my first, let's say, go in a left-hand drive car, and you sort of say, well, you have to remember to drive in the gutter, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you sat in with me then on the way back, you think, oh, seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But it's not instinctive. And then let's say,
well, not being funny, if somebody is used to right-hand drive all the time, all of a sudden there's this huge shift in weight. You suddenly sense the car is not, the bulk of the car is not to your left, it's to your right.
And that's the critical point, yeah. I mean, so a few weeks later, it starts to become fairly natural. But the trouble is, if you've spent years and years and years driving right-hand drive cars, you've got to drive a left-hand drive car often enough that your instincts are now left-hand drive. You've got to break all those years, and your natural instinct has to be opposite to what it has been all those years. So if you get sideways over a crest and it's slippy, tarmac, there's a big gate or something like that, you can't instinctively put the wrong half of the car in the wrong point of the road or you'll crash. So I'm quite pleased. Got a picture from Three Sisters, and I'm clipping a pair of tyres on the right-hand side, the blind side, by about an inch or two, barely missing. And I've not really hit the right-hand side at all. So, but it's been 3 years I've been driving it, yeah.
I'm going to say, can you recommend the Skoda Fabia?
It's a great little car.
The aura of it.
Well, it's really economical. It's an oldish car, so if you're leaving on a car park and it gets a dint or scratch, you're not too bothered. It does everything I want, so I'm quite happy driving it around all the time. Just jump. The weird one is, when you decide to drive a right-hand drive car, I flick back straight away. The only thing that catches me, I end up walking to the wrong door.
Wrong door.
And when we took it once to Barbados, and over there, you know, we're left-hand drive car, but then we're in a recce car, which is right-hand drive car, a little van. And to add insult to injury, it's Japanese, so the indicator washes the wrong way around. So you go up to the wrong door, then you get in the seat, and then you flash somebody with the washers. And, you know. So, and then you've just got used to that, the recce car this is, for a week. And then you get back in the rally car, and you do it all over again, you know. So,
Nigel Wurzbach, we could probably go on for a long time. But thank you very much for joining me on The Backseat Driver. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting.
Yep, thank you very much.
Good to see you.
For local radio, it has to be Ribble FM.
I'm only one call away. I'll be there to save the day. Superman got nothing on me. I'm only one call away. Call me baby if you need a friend. I just wanna give you love. Come on, come on, come on. Reaching out to you, so take a chance. No matter where you go, I'm not afraid to die.
radio station for the Ribble Valley. On air, online and on your smartphone app. Ribble FM.
The stars are listening. Street lights. See every move, every step I take. Heartbreak and champagne. The whole night. I'm sick of the burn, sick of the aftertaste.
Was that easy for you?